All right, buckle up, everybody, because we are diving into some serious drama this time.
Oh, yeah.
We're going back to ancient Israel,
Back in time.
specifically to 1 Kings 17 and 18,
Okay.
for a showdown that is way more intense than anything you'd see on reality TV. It's Yahweh versus Baal.
Battle of the
A
gods.
battle of the
Right.
gods and the stakes. Well, let's just say the fate of an entire kingdom is hanging in the balance.
You know what's really captivating about this story
What's that?
is that it's not just about who has the bigger lightning bolt.
Right.
It's about two fundamentally different ideas
Okay.
of what it means to have faith.
I like that.
So on one side, you have Yahweh,
Yeah.
who demands trust,
Okay.
and on the other, there's Baal, a god that people try to control.
Okay, so I'm picturing this scene straight out of a movie.
Okay.
Ancient Israel, divided kingdom,
Yeah.
everyone's stressed because their crops are failing,
Right.
and in steps this guy, Elijah. I mean, he's not just any prophet.
Right.
He's called a man of God.
Right.
What does that even mean in this context?
That title, Man of God,
Yeah.
it's like a badge of honor,
Okay.
but not for any earthly accomplishment.
Right.
It signifies that someone's life is so intertwined with the divine
Yeah.
that it spills into everything they do.
Wow.
So think of it less as a job title and more like a reflection of their character.
So it's not just about saying the right prayers or performing rituals. It's about who you are at your core.
Exactly.
I see.
And Elijah, being this man of God, throws down a challenge
Okay.
that shakes everything up.
All right.
He declares the drought.
Whoa.
A no rain until I say so kind of drought.
A bold move.
Now, why would he do that?
Well, given what you said about Baal being associated with rain and fertility, it seems like Elijah's taking direct aim at this whole idea of trying to control a god.
Precisely.
Yep.
It's like saying, you think Baal brings the rain. Watch this.
Okay.
Elijah's setting the stage for a showdown, a test of who truly holds power.
A test.
A test.
And then, just when things couldn't get more intense,
Yeah.
we're thrown into this series of stories that sound like they're straight out of a fantasy novel.
Really?
Ravens bringing food,
Wow.
a never-ending supply of oil and flour,
Okay.
even a widow's son being brought back to life. I mean, come on. Did people back then really think these things happened?
Think of these miracles as pieces of a larger puzzle.
Okay.
They escalate,
Yeah.
each one showcasing a different aspect of God's power, especially in moments when things seem hopeless.
Right.
Imagine witnessing this unfold.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that make you reconsider
Yeah.
your understanding of what's possible?
Yeah, it's like Elijah and everyone else is getting this crash course in God's Power 101,
Yeah.
with each miracle serving as a different lesson.
And the timing,
Yeah.
right in the middle of a drought, is crucial.
Right.
It's as if God is saying, look, I can provide, even when circumstances seem dire, you don't need to control me, just trust me.
That's a powerful message,
Yeah.
especially when you consider how desperate people must have been for rain.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, maybe this Baal guy isn't all he's cracked up to be.
And notice how throughout all of this,
Yeah.
it's repeatedly emphasized
Hooray.
that the word of the Lord comes to Elijah. This stands in stark contrast to Baal,
Right.
whose idols have mouths
Yeah.
that don't speak.
Right. They're just statues.
It's the difference between a silent statue
Yeah.
and a voice that actually guides you.
Okay.
So then God sends Elijah to a widow
Yeah.
in Zarephath, which, if I remember correctly, was
Yeah.
enemy
It
territory.
was. It was.
It seems crazy
Yeah.
to rely on a widow who's
Yeah.
about to eat her last meal with her son.
Totally. So this Zarephath challenge, as you called it, is
Yeah.
where things get really interesting.
Yeah.
Think about it. Have you ever felt God nudging you to do something that seemed completely illogical, maybe even a little risky?
Yeah. You like
Definitely.
those moments when your gut says one thing,
Yeah.
but you feel this pull in a completely different direction.
Exactly.
That's exactly what Elijah is facing here.
Okay.
And it's in these moments when we step outside our comfort zones
Yeah.
and rely on faith that we often see God's power most clearly.
It's like he's being tested
Yeah.
to see if he really trusts God, even when it doesn't make sense.
Right.
And then there's that whole story with the unending oil and flour,
Right.
which, seems like a pretty cool magic trick, but I bet there's more to it than meets the eye.
Right. That story isn't just about some supernatural pantry restock.
Okay.
It illustrates a principle that's still relevant today.
What's that?
tithing.
Oh, tithing.
Now, for those who might not be familiar with the term, tithing is essentially setting aside a portion of your resources.
Okay.
Typically 10%.
Yeah.
As an act of faith and gratitude to God.
So, in this story, Elijah basically tells the widow, hey, trust me, bake for me first and see what happens.
Yeah.
It's like the ultimate test of faith.
It is.
Especially when you're facing potential starvation.
And what happens?
What happened?
Miraculously.
Yeah.
She never runs out of flour or oil.
Wow.
It's a powerful message about putting God's priorities first.
Yeah.
Even when you think you don't have enough.
But if we're being honest,
yeah,
we've all been there.
Uh-huh.
We look at our finances, our circumstances,
yeah,
and we think, there's no way I can give anything right now.
Right.
But this story challenges that mindset.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
And here's another thought-provoking detail.
Okay.
Even Elijah.
Yeah.
This man of God.
Uh-huh.
Experiences doubt.
Really?
When the widow's son dies.
Oh, wow.
He's devastated.
That makes sense.
It's a reminder that even the strongest faith can be shaken by tragedy.
Of course.
But what matters is how we respond to that doubt.
So what does Elijah do?
Yeah. He doesn't just give up and say, okay, I guess God isn't real after all.
Right.
He wrestles with his feelings.
Yeah.
He cries out to God.
Uh-huh.
And ultimately, he chooses to act on his faith.
Okay.
Despite his questions.
So he still chooses to believe even though he has questions.
Because a powerful reminder that faith isn't the absence of doubts.
Uh-huh.
It's about how we respond in those moments.
Right.
When we're struggling.
That's incredibly relatable.
Yeah.
We all have those moments where we wonder, God, are you really there?
Yeah.
But instead of suppressing those doubts, maybe we need to learn to wrestle with them.
Wrestle with them.
Just like Elijah did.
Just like Elijah did.
I like that.
Yeah.
So we've got Elijah, this man of God, facing down a drought, performing miracles, and challenging the very idea of what it means to trust in a higher power.
Right.
But this is just the warm-up act, right?
Right.
Wow. What happens next?
Well, imagine the tension.
Okay.
In ancient Israel, 3 years of drought.
Oh, yeah.
People starting to wonder who's really in control here.
Right, right.
And right at this boiling point, Elijah reappears.
Okay.
Ready to turn up the heat even more.
Okay. I'm hooked.
Okay.
So where does this ultimate showdown take place?
Where?
Does he storm the palace? Call out King Ahab in front of everyone?
Think more dramatic.
Okay.
Picture Mount Carmel.
Okay.
This prominent landmark overlooking the Mediterranean Sea.
Okay, yeah, I can picture that.
It's here that Elijah calls for an epic gathering.
Okay.
All of Israel, plus hundreds of prophets of Baal.
Wow, hundreds.
All summoned to witness a showdown for the ages.
So it's not just a theological debate.
No. Nope.
It's a full-blown spectacle.
Right.
A public event that's meant to capture everyone's attention.
Exactly.
Okay, so Elijah lays down the challenge.
Does.
How does he propose to settle this once and for all?
Okay, so
does he have some secret weapon up his sleeve?
Elijah proposes a test.
Okay.
A trial by fire, so to speak.
Interesting.
Two altars are built.
Okay.
One for Baal, one for Yahweh.
Okay.
Each side gets a bull to sacrifice.
Okay.
But there's a twist.
What's the twist?
No fire allowed.
Whoa.
They have to call on their God to send fire from heaven.
Okay.
To consume the sacrifice.
I see.
Whoever answers with fire, well, that's your true God.
That's brilliant. It plays right into Baal's supposed power over storms and fire.
Right.
While also highlighting that Yahweh's power isn't limited to the physical realm.
It's a test designed to reveal the true nature of each God.
I like it.
And the prophets of Baal, they go first.
Okay.
They dance. They chant. They shout themselves hoarse.
Really?
Desperate to prove their God's power.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I mean,
hours pass.
Oh, my goodness.
Silence.
Awkward.
Imagine being in that crowd.
Yeah.
The anticipation.
Yeah.
The doubt creeping in.
So, okay, I have to ask.
Yeah.
What's going through Elijah's mind at this point? Is he nervous? Smug.
We can really speculate.
Yeah, yeah.
But I imagine there's a sense of calm confidence.
Yeah.
He knows who he's dealing with.
Right.
Meanwhile, the prophets of Baal are getting desperate, even resorting to self-mutilation.
Really?
Trying to force a response from their God.
That's intense.
Right.
It really highlights that difference between a God who demands trust.
Yes.
And a God that people try to manipulate.
Exactly.
So as the day wears on, the futility of their efforts becomes more and more apparent.
Yeah.
Baal remains silent.
Silent.
Talk about an awkward silence.
Yeah.
Okay, so finally it's Elijah's turn.
It is.
What does he do?
He doesn't rush.
Okay.
He methodically rebuilds the altar of Yahweh.
Okay.
Digs a trench around it.
Okay.
And then just to make things even more dramatic,
okay.
He douses everything with water.
Whoa, 3 years worth of drought, and he's soaking the sacrifice. What do you make of that?
It seems like he's going out of his way to prove that there's no trickery involved.
Right.
He's putting his complete trust in Yahweh's power to make this happen.
It's almost like he's saying, like, look, I'm so confident that this is going to work that I'm going to make it even harder.
Exactly.
Right.
He's removing any possibility of human intervention.
Yeah.
Any doubt that this is a genuine act of God.
So then with the stage set,
He
utters this simple yet profound prayer.
Right.
And then what happens? I'm on the edge of my seat here.
The answer comes.
Okay.
Not in a whisper.
Okay.
But in a blaze of glory.
Oh, okay.
Fire from heaven descends.
Wow.
Not just the sacrifice.
Right.
But the wood.
Okay.
The stones. Even the water in the trench.
No way. Imagine witnessing that.
Right.
The sheer power, the undeniable proof. How do you think the crowd reacts?
Talk about a showstopper.
Right.
I bet there was a mix of awe. And maybe even a little bit of relief that the drought might finally be over.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You're right on the mark.
Okay.
The crowd falls to their knees.
Wow.
Crying out, the Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God.
Oh my goodness.
It's a moment of mass conversion.
Wow.
A collective recognition of Yahweh's power and authority.
So the prophets of Baal are defeated.
Yeah.
The people have acknowledged Yahweh as the true God.
Yeah.
And fire has rained down from heaven.
It has.
Does this mean everyone lives happily ever after?
That's where things take another interesting turn.
Oh.
This victory,
yeah,
as decisive as it is, doesn't magically solve all of Israel's problems.
Okay.
The battle on Mount Carmel was a turning point.
Right.
But it's not the end of the story.
Okay.
Remember Queen Jezebel?
Oh, yeah. Ahab's wife, the one who was all in on Baal worship.
That's right.
I bet she wasn't too happy about this whole turn of events.
You could say that.
Yeah.
She's furious, vowing revenge on Elijah for killing the prophets of Baal. It's a reminder that even when faced with overwhelming evidence,
yeah,
some people will cling to their false beliefs.
Right.
They're Baals, so to speak.
They're Baals.
Right.
So even after this incredible display of divine power,
yeah,
the struggle continues.
Yeah.
Like that old saying, one battle doesn't win a war.
Exactly.
What happens to Elijah?
Well,
does he stick around to face Jezebel's wrath?
This is where we see a different side of Elijah.
Okay.
He's not just a fearless prophet who calls down fire from heaven.
Right.
He's also human.
Uh-huh.
Capable of experiencing fear and discouragement.
Yeah, that's relatable.
Right.
So faced with Jezebel's threats,
yeah,
he flees for his life.
He does.
It's a bit surprising,
yeah,
after everything he's been through.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think he'd be ready to stand his ground.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
It's a reminder that even the greatest heroes of faith have moments of weakness.
Right.
Moments when they need to rely on God's grace and protection.
That's a good point.
It makes his story all the more relatable, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It shows that even when we feel like we're running on empty.
Yeah.
Even when we're afraid.
Yeah.
God doesn't abandon us.
Right.
So where does Elijah end up?
He finds himself at Mount Horeb.
Okay.
The mountain of God.
Okay.
But this time, God doesn't appear in whirlwind or an earthquake.
Okay.
But in a still, small voice.
Interesting. So it's like a totally different vibe than we saw on Mount Carmel.
It's a powerful contrast.
Right. It's like God is saying, I'm not just in the big, loud moments.
Yeah.
I'm also in the quiet, the subtle,
yeah,
the seemingly insignificant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in that still small voice, Elijah receives new instructions.
Yeah.
A new mission.
Okay.
His story is far from over.
I'm curious about those instructions, but before we get to that.
Yeah.
Can we just pause for a moment and reflect on what we've covered so far?
Yeah.
It's been a whirlwind of emotions.
Yeah.
Tension, anticipation,
huh,
fear, awe, and maybe even a sense of hope.
Definitely.
It's amazing how even after witnessing fire from heaven, the story doesn't wrap up neatly.
Yeah.
It makes me think about how we often expect like some instant transformation in our own lives, you know, after a spiritual high.
Right.
But real faith, it's more of a marathon than a sprint, isn't it?
You've hit on a key point.
Yeah.
The events on Mount Carmel were significant, no doubt.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't erase the deeply rooted issues within the kingdom.
I see.
And Elijah's flight from Jezebel.
Right.
That highlights the ongoing nature of our own spiritual journeys.
Okay.
There will be mountaintop moments.
Yeah.
But also valleys.
Right.
Times when we feel vulnerable and unsure.
So what happens to Elijah at Mount Horeb?
Well,
what does God say to him in that still, small voice?
God asks a simple yet profound question.
Okay.
What are you doing here, Elijah?
Hmm.
It's not a rebuke.
Right.
But an invitation to self-reflection.
Yeah, okay.
Elijah pours out his frustration,
uh-huh.
his fear, his sense of isolation.
He feels like he's the only one left who's truly devoted to Yahweh.
That feeling of being alone in your faith?
Yeah.
It's something I think a lot of people can relate to, even today.
Absolutely. But God reminds Elijah that he's not alone.
Okay.
There are still thousands in Israel who haven't bowed to Baal.
Right.
And he gives Elijah new instructions,
oh, yeah.
A new mission.
Okay, what is it?
That involves anointing new kings and a new prophet to carry on the work.
So even in his moment of despair, God is still working through Elijah,
yeah.
guiding him toward a purpose greater than himself.
Exactly.
It's like that saying, when one door closes, another one opens.
Exactly. And this new mission.
Yeah.
It's not about grand displays of power or single-handedly defeating all the bad guys.
Okay.
It's about faithfulness in the small things.
Uh-huh.
About passing the torch to the next generation.
It's a reminder that sometimes the most significant work we do is behind the scenes.
Right.
In the quiet, unseen moments where we nurture faith and inspire others.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
And as we wrap up our deep dive into this epic story,
yeah.
I'm struck by how many layers there are to unpack.
Yeah, there really are.
It's about the nature of true faith. The tension between trusting God and trying to control him.
Yeah.
The reality of spiritual warfare.
Right.
And the importance of perseverance, even when we face setbacks and doubts.
So much to think about.
What stands out to you as the most important takeaway from this story?
For me, it's the reminder that God is always at work,
uh-huh.
even when we don't see it or understand it.
Right.
He speaks to us in different ways, sometimes through miracles,
yeah.
sometimes through whispers, sometimes through the challenges we face.
Yeah, that's good.
But he's always inviting us to deepen our trust in him,
uh-huh.
to let go of our need for control and to follow him wherever he leads.
I love that.
And as we go back to our own lives, maybe we can ask ourselves,
right.
what are the balls we're clinging to?
Right.
What are we trying to control instead of surrendering to God?
That's a great question to ponder. And maybe, just maybe, if we listen closely enough,
yeah.
we'll hear that still, small voice guiding us
uh-huh.
toward a deeper, more authentic faith.
And on that note, that's our deep dive into 1 Kings 17 and 18.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thanks for listening.